From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. So we now know the results of New Hampshire's primary with Bernie Sanders, now with 28% of precincts reporting, getting 25.8% of the vote. Pete Buttigieg with 24.5%. Amy Klobuchar, 19.8%. Elizabeth Warren in fourth. Joe Biden in fifth. Andrew Yang and Michael Bennett suspended their campaigns yesterday. Deval Patrick is expected to do the same today. So the presidential campaign now moves west, with candidates and their teams planning a number of stops in Nevada and California over the next few weeks. South Carolina's primary is scheduled in between the two. That one is on Leap Day, February 29th. The next Democratic debate is in Las Vegas on February 19th, and that is the same day as Governor Newsom's State of the State address in California. We will bring you live coverage and analysis of Newsom's address immediately following Insight. Today, a PolitiFact conversation about California election misinformation. Reporter Chris Nichols from the PolitiFact California team is with me in the studio. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Beth.
Glad to have you here. Daniel Funke is a reporter for PolitiFact National. He's joining us with some fact-checking from St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Beth. Thanks for having me.
So, Chris, let's start with you and what started the team's focus on misinformation, which is sometimes a place we don't want to go because of confusion.
That's right. Well, we've noticed just a lot of confusion, a lot of false statements, mainly on social media, and this has been for weeks, maybe even months, leading up to what will be California's primary election, March 3rd. And, you know, there's misinformation about how you can vote in California, about who you can vote for, depending on your party affiliation. So we really just wanted to set the record straight, be a place where people can come. The article we published yesterday is really sort of an authority on what's true, what's not when it comes to voting in California.
Californians have their mail-in ballot right now. They're in the process of decision-making. So I think a rolling conversation about possible mix-ups is important right now. Academics think it's important, too.
They do. And we spoke with Rick Hassan. He's a UC Irvine professor who specializes in election law and has really looked at this issue of misinformation spreading on social media. And he said that, combined with other concerns about election, has sort of led to this erosion of trust in the United States when it comes to the election process.
When an election is administered in an incompetent way, as we saw in Iowa, it leads people to worry about the system. They might post information that is false, suggesting that the election was intentionally rigged. These things build on each other and work synergistically to undermine voter confidence in the process. Therefore, it's really important for election administrators to explain what the rules are, to be as transparent as possible, to own up when they make mistakes, and for the media to not sensationalize mistakes and make them into a scandal when they might just be simple human error.
That sounds like an admirable goal, but of course there's a lot of room in there for a lot of errors and misunderstandings.
There is, and as the professor talked about, there is a really important role for election officials, for the media, to provide the best, most accurate information and to counter the false claims that are out there. And I think the biggest topic or the biggest source of confusion that we've noticed so far in California is essentially the rules that govern how no party preference voters can choose candidates in the primary election. There are now more than 5 million no party preference voters in the state. That's the second largest party now in California. There are more of those voters than there are registered Republicans. There are still more Democrats overall in the state. But there's just a lot of bad information saying that these voters, these undeclared voters, can't choose their favorite candidates. And that's just not true. It's maybe a little bit more difficult, but there still are avenues for them to go forward. For example, if you want to vote for a Democratic presidential candidate in the March 3rd election and you're a no party preference voter, you do have to request a Democratic Party ballot. You're not going to just automatically be given one. You have to contact your county elections office to do that. if you want to vote for President Trump or any other Republican presidential candidate in the March 3rd primary, and you're a no party preference voter, you have to go and do another step. You have to re-register as a Republican. That's because the Republican Party here in California requires that. So there are, a few extra steps. It might be a little more challenging, but some of these claims that we've seen, these persistent claims and myths about not being allowed to vote for who you want to, are just not right. And so that's something we explore in our article at PolitiFact.com about the primary election here in California.
It does make me wonder if some no party preference voters will bypass that extra step and just turn in their ballot, which means there will be no vote for any presidential candidate. However, there will be votes in other races. You just don't choose in the primary for a candidate.
I think that could happen. I think what also may happen is a lot of, or at least some no party preference voters may show up to a polling place or a vote center on election day and perhaps be surprised that they have to take a couple of extra steps. California this year, a new allowance is that people can go on election day all the way up to election day and including election day and register or even switch their registration to a different party on election day at their polling places and vote centers. That is a new allowance this year.
Which means people are going to show up at their polling place, maybe with a no party preference ballot, and they'll say, I don't have presidential choices here. And a lot will be happening at the polling places. So those people in place, those volunteers, I think will be quite a bit on duty this
year. They're going to have to answer a lot of questions. Yeah. And I think one really good resource, along with what we've produced, is this step-by-step guide that the California Secretary of State's website has produced. It sort of walks you through, no matter what your party affiliation is, it walks you through what you need to do if you're a Democrat, a Republican, a no-party preference voter, and how you can go ahead and vote for the candidate that you want in the March 3rd primary.
Chris, stand by here a second. Daniel, I know this is a bit of a curveball being thrown at you, but outside of California, is there issue, discussion, kind of a navigation of how best to do this either declined to state category or no party preference? It's called different things in different places. Can you add to this conversation?
So unfortunately, I haven't seen a lot of misinformation about this on social media. We've been tracking certainly voting and primary falsehoods on social media. But from what we've seen, the platforms, including Facebook and Twitter, have been pretty good about taking down falsehoods about voting.
Okay. So in California, the social media around this and other items has, as we've been acknowledging and talking about, kind of pushed towards some other pieces of misinformation, falsehood. One in particular was surrounding Bernie Sanders.
That's right. There was a post that a video on Twitter that was shared, I think, about 1,000 times or more about Bernie Sanders, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' name being intentionally placed last on the California ballot. That's just not the case. California has a random alphabetical drawing to determine where the names go on the ballots. And then throughout California, those names are then changed around by assembly districts. So in some parts of the state, Sanders' name will appear near the top, other parts near the middle, other parts near the bottom of the ballot. But nothing is done on purpose to put any candidate's name at the top or bottom.
And besides no party preference, the other confusion this year is Prop 13. The real Prop 13, the not Prop 13, the what does Prop 13 mean? So go for it. By now you must have figured out a succinct way to explain this.
Right. Yeah. And this has probably been, next to the no party preference voting, the biggest source of confusion. So on the March ballot, Californians will find just one ballot measure. It has a familiar but very confusing name. It's called Proposition 13, but it has nothing to do with the historic measure, the property tax measure that was passed in the 1970s with the same name. This new one is a $15 billion school bond. It would help pay for upgrades for K through 12 schools, community colleges, public universities, but again, not connected to that old Prop 13. I think the thing that compounds it is that there has been misleading and false information about the old Prop 13. Mm. That's because there is an effort to qualify a measure for the November ballot here in California, not the March one, but the November ballot. And that, if it's successful, it would essentially change parts of the old Prop 13. It would undo some of the property tax protections for commercial properties, industrial properties of $3 million or more. It would not directly affect homeowners. And the false information is that California is trying to eliminate or repeal that old Prop 13. That's just not the case. There are efforts to change it. But again, that's for the November ballot.
It's not going to be called Prop 13, though.
Right. Well, I think the old one will retain that name. There's even been an effort to retire the number 13 when it comes to these propositions, just to avoid some of this confusion that we're talking about.
So split roll is the phrase to remember for November.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. I'm talking with Chris Nichols. Daniel Funke from the PolitiFact National team is joining us. And Daniel, I want you to jump in here because the area that you've focused on is actually sort of funny, but important. You're looking at satire. How and why is that on your radar?
Yeah, so we have been looking at websites that you might not be familiar with. So we're not talking about The Onion here. We're talking about websites that are claiming to publish satirical content, but this might be made-up web content about politics. And these stories aren't self-evidently satire. They're not funny. They don't really contain any nuance, but they're made-up stories about political figures. And last month, we published an investigation on PolitiFact.com that found hundreds of websites actually copy those stories and publish them as genuine news. And those websites got hundreds of thousands of engagements on platforms like Facebook. So going into the primary season, these were some of the most popular websites, and they were just copying and ripping off satirical content. They weren't even making anything up to begin with, but a lot of people fell for this stuff.
Isn't some of this work aimed at defining satire and figuring out what exactly to be fact-checking in what category?
Right, of course. It's a really hard distinction because us at PolitiFact don't want to be the tastemakers telling people what is and isn't satire. We're always focused on what our readers want and what they're asking us about. So we will fact check allegedly satirical articles if we have a lot of people either emailing us or sliding into our messages about it or leaving comments asking if it's true, because we see our coverage as a public service and we always want to be providing that information and context to people, even if a website is claiming to be satire.
You're tracking some Facebook pages and trying to figure out where the strongest source of misinformation is. What's coming out of that?
Yeah, so we have started tracking about 300 Facebook pages or groups that have shared content that we fact-checked as false over the past year. And we're still going over those results, but we have seen a couple pages with millions of likes. And these are typically hyper-partisan pages on both the left and the right that will mix just hyper-partisan talking points and campaign rhetoric with sometimes deliberately false information that might have been lifted from elsewhere, whether it be Twitter or websites. And then those will get distributed either through groups or users who are sharing them. So it's still too early to tell which of these pages will have the biggest effect on the primary season, but we are starting to track this, and it's a major driver of misinformation on Facebook.
This is a conversation about voter misinformation. So, Chris, I want to get back to you and the work that the PolitiFact California team has done about President Trump's claims about California voter fraud. What's the investigation been? What are the facts around this?
Well, the president, unfortunately, has made quite a few unsubstantiated and false claims about massive voter fraud in California without providing evidence. And, we've, through the last 3 years, just knocked those down as they've come up. I think we've rated about rated them pants on fire about three different times when he's resurfaced the claims, either in an interview last summer on Meet the Press or on Twitter. You know, when you speak with election officials around the state and experts on this topic, they say that there are a minuscule number of or cases of voter fraud, and certainly nothing to the idea of massive voter fraud in California.
Daniel, you've looked at Iowa because there was some misinformation spread about voter fraud in Iowa. So what are the facts around this one?
Yeah, so the same day of the Iowa caucuses, an organization called Judicial Watch, which is a conservative organization, published a report claiming that there, in eight Iowa counties, there are more registered voters than there are citizens. We took a look at the data at PolitiFact, and we found that that report is false. They were using outdated information, and there's actually only one county in Iowa among the eight that Judicial Watch identified that has more registered voters than people that live there. But the county had about 2,000 citizens to begin with, and experts told us it's not uncommon to have more inactive voters than citizens. Also, the Iowa Secretary of State came out and debunked Judicial Watch's story, saying that it had found no evidence to back up its numbers. And other experts we talked to echo Chris's point, told us that voter fraud is relatively rare. I think since 2009, but over the past decade or so, there have only been about 20 confirmed cases of voter fraud in Iowa to begin with. So there's no evidence to suggest that this is a widespread problem. And it was no coincidence that Judicial Watch published this report on the same day of the Iowa caucuses. Mm-hmm.
We have been talking about voter misinformation. Daniel, will you add to this some of the work you're doing surrounding the novel coronavirus and the claims which, as this virus moves globally, seem to expand from a lot of different sources? What have you looked at and found to be fact?
Yeah, so PolitiFact has spent the past few weeks fact-checking dozens of false or misleading claims about the coronavirus, and they fall into a few different categories. So first, we have false reports, either about the impact or the reception of coronavirus. So there's a hoax going around that we have rated false that claims that FEMA imposed martial law or asked President Trump to impose martial law in the United States, and that's fabricated. It comes from a hoax website. There was another false claim that said 10,000 people have died from the Wuhan coronavirus, and that is also false. The latest estimates from the World Health Organization put the death toll at about a little more than 1,000 as of yesterday. So those are false claims about impact. Then there are a ton of conspiracy theories about the origin of the virus. False information always proliferates when there's an absence of confirmed information, and there's still much researchers don't know about where the novel coronavirus came from. So a lot of social media users and fringe conspiratorial websites have claimed that it was developed in a lab or that it is a Chinese bioweapon. And we found that there's no evidence to support those claims. You know, these are conspiracy theories that are trying to galvanize the conversation, get some clicks in the process. So yeah, we're still fact-checking this. It's kind of distracted us from our election coverage a little bit. But we think it's really important to debunk these conspiracies, especially hoaxes we've seen about bogus cures. So we've seen false posts tell people to drink bleach, and that'll ward off the coronavirus. And that's some really dangerous false information. Obviously, bleach does not ward off the coronavirus, and there's no known cure or vaccine for the virus yet.
Yeah, I think with the news cycle being the way it is, we are heavy in the political season, but the coronavirus, I would guess, is driving more people to websites to find factual information right now. Do you have any way of measuring that?
We haven't measured it in terms of numbers, but just anecdotally, I can tell you the majority of the hoaxes that we see through our monitoring tools and both through our monitoring tools and what readers are asking us about is either about coronavirus or Nancy Pelosi ripping up President Trump's speech at the State of the Union. So it kind of gives you an inkling of what people are talking about on social media, because if you have one or a few readers ask you about something, you have to assume that there are hundreds or maybe thousands of people who are wondering the same thing. So that is why PolitiFact has invested so much time in fact-checking false posts about the coronavirus, and also the coronavirus and misinformation about it has a direct impact on people's health, because if people see this hoax about drinking bleach and go out and drink bleach, obviously that's going to have a much more negative impact than some election misinformation. Although both are important, we want to prioritize the former.
Tell me some of what's swirling around about Nancy Pelosi's tearing of the speech. What has PolitiFact looked at?
Yeah, so yesterday we published a story contextualizing a video that President Trump tweeted over the weekend, I believe. It basically shows President Trump honoring all these different guests at the State of the Union address, including military families and a young woman receiving a scholarship. And immediately after those clips, the video shows Nancy Pelosi famously or infamously ripping up the president's speech to make a political statement about how she kind of dishonored the president in that way. A lot of people were sharing it and thinking that, you know, she had actually ripped up the pages after President Trump mentioned those guests during the address, when in fact she waited till the end of the address to rip it up. And she actually stood and clapped for all of those guests. So again, it's not a piece of deliberately false misinformation. It's just a misleadingly edited video that some people received or perceived to be, a slight against the president.
All right, Daniel. Well, thanks for joining us. We'll post a link to, in particular, some of the fact-checking that's been done about the coronavirus, and it will lead people to politifact.com. And we'll stay in touch with you in your ongoing work. Thanks for joining us from St. Petersburg, Florida.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Chris Nichols here still in the studio. I do want to add one election note, and that is that California voters have this track your vote option, and we haven't talked about it, but we should.
That's right. It's called Where's My Ballot? And it's a pretty neat service that the state is offering. It's a new way for voters to track and receive notifications on the status of their vote by mail ballot. And so essentially, voters can go sign up at, I'll mention the website here. It's called wheresmyballot.sos.ca.gov, or if you just search on the California Secretary of State's website, you can find it. And you'll get automatic emails or text messages or voice call notifications about your ballot, and you can be sure that it was actually received and processed. It looks like quite a few counties are participating, including Sacramento, Placer, Yolo, Sutter in our region. It looks like the list does not include every county in the state, but that's one piece of accurate information as opposed to what we were talking about earlier. And then I did want to mention, you know, when it comes to California's primary election, we would like to hear from our audience if they are seeing statements on social media that are confusing, that they feel are misleading when it comes to the election, how to vote, who you can vote for. We'd like to hear from you. Our article today, which is at on the main page of politifact.com and also at capradio.org, includes a way for people to go and ask PolitiFact California to look into things. So please do that. We're happy to look into your questions.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Beth.
Chris Nichols is the reporter with the PolitiFact California team based at Cap Radio. We have posted a link to a lot of what we've talked about. It's at capradio.org/insight. I said during the segment that Deval Patrick was expected to suspend his run for the presidency, and he has, in fact, officially done that. There's much more news on our website. And up next, our show continues. We'll be talking about the youth vote in California. So stay with us. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.